Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. We have a guest today, Tim Hoffman, from the owner of Tim Hoffman and Associates. But he is a CISSP, MS, and several other things that we talk about when we look at these credentials that all of us in cybersecurity put after our names. I see like 10 of those.
Well, there's closer to 20, but okay.
Closer to 20. Whoa. So we're going to talk about that as well as some other things and education in cyber today and how we can look at what is of value. But Tim, welcome today. Thanks for joining.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Definitely. So we want to know your background. I mean, with this list of 20 different certifications in cyber and many other business ones, tell us about your background and how you kind of got to that place.
So I spent 22 years in the Navy. I did 12 years in satellite control, tech control, offline crypto, message centers, you name it. Went into the cryptologic community, part of the Navy's intelligence community, did electronic warfare, signals intelligence, signal security, all kinds of high frequency direction finding. That stuff's in the museums now. I'd spent a couple years working for the Office of Secretary of Defense, envisioning the DITSCAP process, if you're familiar with certification and accreditation. Spent a couple years designing about 600 networks, installing, implementing, configuring, troubleshooting, level 3 tech support for a small company you might have heard of, American International Group.
I did hear them. So are you okay with talking about that, or is it like,
No, it was actually, I'm perfectly okay talking about it. It was actually a very good experience. It was a very good learning experience for me. I was a vice president of one company, president of another, ended up as a, in the Fortune 300 world as a director of information assurance here in town for ITT back in the day.
Okay.
And then left there to start training and have been training quite a bit. Platform training has been something that's been on my platter since 1973. I've been inside the Navy and outside the Navy. I've been an instructor, so college professor, you name it. I've done the gigs. And in the last 5 years, I've been in healthcare. And I see a very big need in healthcare for help and support from a cyber perspective.
Interesting. So, in the Navy for 22 years, yep. What made you, when you were a young person, want to join the Navy? Where were you from before that, and what was your kind of backstory, we'll say?
So, a kid from a city block, grew up in Chicopee, Massachusetts, which is in Western Mass. And always wanted to be in the service, serve my country, and I wanted to do something that was unique. And when I started looking around, the Navy had the best educational programs, had the best travel programs. You could pretty much go anywhere, and that was the word of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Go where you want to go. And I'm like, okay. Well, then I found out that the Navy has what are called needs of the service.
Uh-huh. So you didn't get to pick where you went anywhere you want to go.
Exactly.
They got to pick that.
Exactly.
And I know that is. I was in the Navy myself. So
the answer is yes, sir, right?
Uh-huh. It's yes. You can go anywhere and do anything that we want you to.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've spent 4 years on a ship. And, you know, it wasn't that it was a bad experience. It's that I was on a ship that had 20 years of nuclear fuel on it and a decommission date for like 5 years down the road. So they were just trying to get their money's worth out. But we were out to sea.
All the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
And then even when we pulled in half the time, we wouldn't shut down the reactors. So I did work on the reactor plant. So it was like being out to sea.
Wow.
I remember out of those 4 years, over 200 days were out to sea each year.
That's about right. especially on
about
a nuke.
Right.
Well, no, oh, on a man. Nuke, on a nuke, that's about right. A nuclear platform, you are going to be out to sea a lot because they do want to get their money out of it. They
exactly.
spend a lot of money on those platforms.
Exactly. So let's take a quick break for hear from our sponsors. When we come back, Tim's going to tell us about all these certifications.
Glad
and
to.
What he thinks they do for us and what our young people, if you're looking to pursue certifications, which ones are the best to hit up?
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back. We're talking to Tim Hoffman from Hoffman Associates. And as we were talking before the break, Tim has like 20 different certifications that he puts in that list after his name. And we're really curious about his, you know, recommendations and experience there with certifications. So Tim, tell us why you went, first of all, why'd you go after so many?
Actually, they came up one at a time when I needed them. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I'm not a proponent of is to get a certification just for the sake of having the title. I am a proponent of having the knowledge that you can put to work at the time your employer needs it. When an employer needs, for example, you to know something about Cisco, you really, if you're in the IT or IT security or cybersecurity world, you should recognize that to be an expert, you really do need to study up. You're not going to do it without studying.
Mm-hmm.
And the certification is a natural culmination.
So it's a guideline of what to study, is basically
that's exactly
what I would say.
The common body of knowledge from each of these certifications mm-hmm. is a yardstick. And as you go through things, I've written 5 books. A good example is a couple of books on TCP/IP. At the time, there was a certification on TCP/IP. I didn't get the certification. I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't need the certification to prove that I could write the book. However, if I was working for an employer that wanted me to know something about a specific technology, or maybe a program manager certification, or cybersecurity, CISSP, I would go out and get that certification to show that I was the expert in that area.
Okay. So how much do these different certifications and areas overlap? I mean, how would you say, okay, this one was of value, but these two were just kind of like the same content, follow-on type of things?
I've had this question before, and the fundamental way to look at it is that as an author, a book author has a point of view.
Mm-hmm.
If you and I are going to make a book up, your point of view...
Which we both have.
Bingo. My point of view, that's an important point too. You took a point of view when you wrote that book.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I take a point of view when I write a book. Those different points of view are what help you when you are going down the line to really become an expert. You can't say, I read the book and I'm the expert.
Mm-hmm.
You've read a book and you've become someone who's knowledgeable about one author's point of view. So the difference is, if you really want to become an expert, you have to get, and yes, there is overlap. I'm not denying that there's no overlap. There is overlap. However, looking fundamentally at ITIL or cloud knowledge or security knowledge or networking knowledge and going on, each one of them approaches it a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm. And knowing the differentiation between how each body of knowledge approaches it to get their certification, what do you feel that gives you as an edge?
That's a good question, because I think it's all valuable learning. I'm feeling that I can see a bigger picture than perhaps someone without the certification or someone who may have a certification but may only have one or two certifications. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because as you go down that body of knowledge, it expands your viewpoint. It mm-hmm. actually helps you see a bigger picture. And I think it adds value to the company you're working for.
Okay. So, and I loved one of our my instructors here used an example. He's like, the cert is just a piece of paper.
Yep.
It's the knowledge that you get in the pursuit of that cert that is valuable to the company.
Agreed.
And some students will go after the certification, and he even said he's hired people that have certifications to come in, and it's like they don't have the knowledge that he would expect them to have to get that certification. So they just studied for the test, forgot, absorbed, dumped, whatever they call that process of how do you pass a test.
There's a piece of this that we have to talk about, and that is, I can know something but not know how to apply it. And that's where I think in your organization, having labs is a critical piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just have book knowledge. You have to be able to apply it.
Fair enough. And definitely, I think that you'll see as far as a lot of the military organizations are starting to put requirements that for each level promotion, you have to have this cert, that cert, and they have a ladder, basically, you crawl up. And I know in the education system, we're looking at overlapping those, and how do we put, the required certs in, to our degree programs at the times when they'll be needing to make those advancements in their career as students is definitely something that, yep. that we're looking at. I know I've seen this go back and forth, though, a couple times. I'm curious about your thoughts on it, where we'll say 10 years ago, development languages, there was all kinds of certifications you take on them. And that, you don't see them anymore. It seems to have been a hype at the time. Everybody get these certs, and I remember having a C++ cert, a C#, different languages. And I will tell you that those languages that I was studying then that I was the best at aren't the most common languages used today. 5-6 years later, there's been a shift. And I always wonder, is this a cyclical thing where right now we're just demanding these certs and looking for it, and in the future that'll kind of cycle out again?
One thing I'll do for you is I'll bring you a mind map. If you go to Google and you just do mind map cybersecurity,
okay.
just Google that, you're going to take a look at all of the realms that cybersecurity currently looks at mm-hmm. as data points. So someone says, I want to be a forensics expert. One of the things that we have to understand in cybersecurity is that you can't be a forensics expert without understanding a whole lot of cybersecurity. You can be someone who could push the buttons. So the level of applied capability, mm-hmm. the ability of the person to do the work is going to be different. The idea of getting certifications is valuable, but there's three things that you need: education, experience, and certifications. You can't get away from that. If you don't have all of that, your value to a company is lessened.
Okay, fair enough.
As a hiring manager, I would look at someone and I would say, okay, yeah, you got the cert. What did you do with it after you got it? So you're Security Plus certified, that's great. You meet 8570.1-M, I'm happy, great, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do with that certification? How did you implement security in your organization? How did you save the organization money? How did you add value? What percentage did you add? How do you quantify that? And that's where I think a lot of people fall down, because they get a cert and they run right out and say, I've got the cert, hire me. Well, mm-hmm. you haven't shown any value. You're
a lot of times
your starting point.
That's because students are looking to say, okay, I want to make it to the next level, so I need to get the cert
yep.
in order to go get the job.
Yep. That's true.
So it's
here.
That same catch 22 of, I'm trying to get into a new field, so I'm getting a degree to get yep. in that field, but I have to have somebody hire me first to start that process of proving what I can do.
And that's where I think universities, colleges and universities, can take a look at businesses like ours and do apprenticeship programs, not just an internship program where somebody's hanging around, a real apprenticeship program where they're doing something in a real job without having necessarily the full impact of a big enterprise, but understanding little parts of it as they're going, so that we would turn cybersecurity more into an apprentice a journeyman, a master, kind of like you do in the plumbing or electrical trades.
And you know, absolutely, and that's one of the things that I'd say a lot of, and we're even looking at how we can do that at Colorado Tech, how we can add that into our experience. And I would say that companies, the people that hear this, that can facilitate that, reach out to us, because we would love to have those supporting companies. A lot of times the short straw in this is companies that are doing cyber are in the secret sauce of whatever they're doing.
Yep.
And bringing somebody in that isn't fully committed to the company, an employee, bringing them in as a part-time intern is hard to get organizations to commit to.
Yep, I agree. I think there's something to be said for that. That's where I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe the federal and the state government have recent legislation for apprenticeship programs. I'm working with Mount Carmel Center here in town, and there's a state bill that allows veterans to have a program for them at $10 an hour. It's not really a big fund of money, but it is something that the veterans can do so they can transition into cybersecurity.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to take a break here for our sponsors, but come back and we want to talk about your healthcare organization and experience there.
Sure.
All right, we'll be right back in a minute.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
Well, welcome back, and we are still talking here to Tim Hoffman with Hoffman Associates. And before the break, we were talking about certifications, but really his area, and we wanted to bring in and talk about, is he's in healthcare, and the need for cybersecurity in healthcare, as we were talking before, is greater, from your opinion, than all the other areas you've worked in before. So we want to talk about that and talk about what is missing. So give us, you know, your background in healthcare here, and start leading into, you know, what is missing that even, you know, we're talking to students here a lot today, what can we put together in the future that doesn't exist now for cybersecurity and protection in healthcare?
So that's a really strong question. It's a really good question. The reason that healthcare is so far behind, there are a couple of focuses that I want to touch on. Medical devices with embedded operating systems that are 10 years out of date, 15 years out of date. Doctors who are fixing people's problems, and I'm talking cancers, leukemias, their best day, okay, isn't even close to my worst day. So the need is great in terms of human. Another part of it is the understaffing in almost every security, cybersecurity world that you can imagine. Healthcare has the money and spends the money, but remember that healthcare is focused on healthcare. That's their business. So what can we bring? What's valuable? Certainly you can go out and get the healthcare IT technician certification. Great. That's mm-hmm. wonderful. However, if we want to have an entrepreneurial spirit and we want to do something, we have to understand that cybersecurity has to get away from saying no. Cybersecurity people
agree more with that one.
Well, we learn how to say no because we're going to base it on laws. I have 270 slides in a HIPAA presentation to explain the basics, the privacy rule, the security rule, the final clarification, which was 462 pages. It's amazing. The point is, we as cybersecurity professionals can bring an entire layer of entrepreneurship to partner with a business, to be able to bring new ideas to the business on how to swap things out, how to do backups, how to do patching, how to do automation in better ways. Those are all areas of opportunity. And remember that a small clinic doesn't have 20 or 30 cybersecurity people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in a 30,000 person organization, and we have 12. So that kind of gives you a sense of how big the effort is. We're consultants, if you want to call it that.
Uh-huh.
And we're consultants to say yes, to figure out how to make it work, not to say no, the law says you can't do that. Well, if the law says you can't do it, there's a reason and you shouldn't do it. However, let's put our minds together and figure out how to get the business to do it properly, to back things up, to encrypt, to protect the information. Patient information, I'm going to say this right out, I'm a patient. My information is valuable.
And we're all a patient in some healthcare system, organization, hospital.
You've probably gone to an emergency room or an urgent care, or you've gone to a hospital, or you've been seen by a dentist, a chiropractor. I mean, we can go down the list. Everybody has been seen by somebody. So yeah, the healthcare system is pervasive and it has tremendous needs, and we have to protect data.
Okay. So we hear this all the time. I've heard 50 speakers say, we have to do this. What do we do? Give us some, hey, here's some areas that you can start working. You know, when I'm teaching in my class, students will say, okay, that's interesting, we learned that. And I'll say, here's areas that I know in the industry that need you to go develop an application to do this. Where can we start directing?
Sure.
If we had a list of 50 things that are needed and we could drop them on a student body to say, this is your senior product, that is tremendous. But that's what they're looking for.
Here's a small example. We have the National Institute of Standards and Technology Special Publication 800-53 is a list of controls.
Mm-hmm.
If you take those controls and you put them into a checklist or an approachable assessment module, what you've done is you've created a tool that you can go in paper and pen and do an assessment for an organization.
A compliance tool.
And if you were to automate that in a better way, that's mm-hmm. an opportunity. But that's not the end all and the be all. Here's mm-hmm. an example. Do you know whether your computer was hacked today?
I would hope not, but you know what? I don't.
Did you
if my antivirus hasn't popped up,
right.
if somebody from right. my corporate IT hasn't called me.
Right. Did you check your logs? How do you know that someone is knocking at your door if you don't even read the logs? And healthcare, remember, they're focused on healthcare. They don't have time to read logs.
So just something to look through their
a log parser,
their computers and say, hey, this might be something we need to check today.
Bingo. A log parser with an automated tool on the end to allow someone to put in very simple, common English phrases to look for whatever you want to alert on and have that reported to whoever the one security person is for the entire hospital. Maybe they've got two or three. I'm being facetious, but you get what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Look at assessment, look at compliance, look at logs, reading the logs, look at what is being done in the area of backup that actually helps systems. I've watched, and one of the reasons why I work in healthcare is because I had heard that a specific file system had been broken mm-hmm. and 6 years of patient data were lost. It was a longitudinal study, research. As a result, the research was lost.
Mm-hmm.
6 years of research is a lot of research when you got to go back to ground zero. They didn't know they needed a backup.
Mm-hmm.
Simple user awareness training, simple approaches to the training and education piece to help doctors, nurses, administrative staff. It's the entire system.
Okay. So you're doing your consulting for a hospital.
Yes.
What areas can you mention, like maybe their top five, I don't know if you have that many, pain points that, you know, hospitals see this, and this.
So budget is an area, because medical equipment costs a fortune.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors and nurses cost a fortune. And now, add to the mix, cybersecurity people cost a fortune.
Okay.
One of the things I counsel people to do is to go out and volunteer. Find an assisted living facility. Find a nonprofit that needs help. Find get into cybersecurity that way. From the healthcare perspective, what are the pain points? Coordination. We are a massive organization, very, very large organization. Coordination takes forever. It's
so
difficult.
The logistics of records and multiple people and how they're passed, how they're stored, where they're at, keeping track of them.
Yeah. Okay. And that system costs $35 million. Not trivial. So that's a pain point.
Okay.
Now, add to that, the landscape of healthcare as it stands today is shifting, it's changing. What's going on is hospitals are being bought up. If you look here in Colorado, the DaVita Group has bought up CSHP. They bought up hospital after hospital. Why are they doing that? They're trying to centralize the control, cost models. What you're going to start seeing is if you have a health insurance capability, in other words, your employer's giving you health insurance, you're going to have to validate every year that the dependents you have are in fact legitimate dependents because that's costing them money.
Mm-hmm.
The money issue is huge in healthcare. And oh, by the way.
So a way to optimize things so that they can save money.
Exactly. That's exactly the issue. And oh, by the way, under meaningful use, which is a whole different discussion, I don't want to get into it because it's very, very lengthy and very burdensome, but under meaningful use, a hospital that's given money can get money taken away. At the same time, they might not get reimbursed for the full amount of the care that they provided. So there's all those insurance checkpoints. All of that stuff needs to be ferreted out.
So now we're talking records transferring back and forth between
insurance companies
and the management of the logistics of payment insurance records to people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that huge?
These are great pain points.
Those are pain
you had
points
mentioned,
for everybody.
You had mentioned though equipment. I'm curious about that one.
So just as an example. Take, for example, an organization, and I'm going to use a fictitious organization so that I'm not saying anything bad about anyone because I don't want to say anything bad about anyone. Let's assume for the sake of discussion that your organization has X number of patients.
Mm-hmm.
That X number of patients doesn't equate to X number of dollars for cybersecurity. In other words, your budget for cybersecurity is based on what you can explain to your boss for a cost-benefit analysis. Remember, your boss may be a doctor, may be a researcher, and they may have a focus on saving people's lives. How much are we really going to spend on equipment if you've got cancer, leukemia, HIV, AIDS, and so on and so forth to work on? There's got to be a balance. So what you're looking at as a cybersecurity professional is you're looking at always, always, always being able to explain in dollars and cents, what does this buy the hospital, the clinic, the urgent care place, the group of practitioners, the dentists? What are they going to get out of this? Putting in security for security's sake doesn't do any good.
Gotcha. So we need to look at, for all our students, how do you explain your cyber needs in terms of bottom line and return on investment, the business aspects?
You have to do that for every business, more so in healthcare.
Because they're not technologically savvy.
Some of the doctors are incredibly technical, but they're not focused on
it. Gotcha.
So if you're talking to a C-level executive,
mm-hmm.
think about this. That person may have a span of authority over 8,000 people. That person is not going to be thinking about what you had for breakfast this morning. So you have to explain in very... have you heard the term putting out the breadcrumbs for someone to follow?
Mm-hmm.
You have to actually be very careful about your words. You have to think through it, and you have to explain why this matters to that person. And if you're talking to a doctor who's worried about curing cancer or curing leukemia or working on someone with AIDS and all of the various pieces of that puzzle, and they have that in 15 different operating rooms going on at the same time, all of a sudden you start to see that this is a pretty big challenge. It's not the challenge is not just to be able to say good morning, doctor. The
mm-hmm.
challenge is to be able to say this is what the value to you is. And if you're not focused on the value to the doctor or to the hospital, to the organization, there is no value. It becomes a discussion about, hey, what's the weather like today?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So this has been a great conversation, looking at what, you know, the pain points and what we can do, get into the military or the healthcare system. I always like to, as we're closing though, give you an opportunity to talk about how people can utilize your services, how they can get a hold of you, what types of things you offer to people.
Okay, 30-second pitch. I have the Center for National Threat Assessment authorized us for 3 classes. They have the American Board for Certification in Homeland Security, and those 3 classes last Thursday were expanded out to 15. So we're going to be putting on new classes. That's cyberdefenseassociates.com.
Okay.
TimHoffmanAssociates.com will point you to Cyber Defense Associates. The other part of our company is doing threat assessment, risk assessment, open source intelligence, basically consulting for medium to large size companies. Mm-hmm. And what we're looking at is how to help people with compliance, how to help people with learning HIPAA. We want to put a very low cost HIPAA training plan together.
People, hospitals, companies, who is the people that need you, that you're...
Yes.
Okay.
Here's the law. HIPAA, as a law, says you have to have an hour of training a year if you're in the healthcare system.
Okay.
Again, if you're worried about these massive problems with society, illnesses, diseases, sicknesses, you're not looking at training. So you're not going to spend thousands of dollars. If I can get that price down to under $100 per person or even lower if possible, we'll be able to capture a huge part of the market.
Okay.
Because they need that.
So hospitals, people in charge of those
staff,
healthcare systems, that is the type of training you do. Reach out to, and give us your website again.
TimHoffmanAssociates.com. We also do certification training. We do CISSP, Security Plus, Network Plus, A Plus, Linux Plus, healthcare IT technician, and so forth.
All right. Well, thanks for joining today, Tim.
I do too much.
Yes. And all we all do in the cybersecurity world.
Amen.
4 or 5 jobs, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for joining today. It's been a pleasure. And we look forward to having you on again sometime. Thanks a lot.
I'd love to. Come on.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
The views or opinions expressed by me during this podcast are my own and are not those of my employer, Colorado Technical University.
You have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.